You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The NBA is back. With those magic words, welcome in to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our sponsors over at MyBookie. Go to mybookie.ag and enter the promo code LOCKEDON, and from there, MyBookie will match your initial deposit dollar for dollar. So as we chat this Tuesday, as mentioned off the top, it's opening night in the NBA. Now, unfortunately, it's not for the Rockets. It's not for most teams because there are only two games, both nationally televised. The Eastern Conference opener, Philadelphia at Boston, and then in the West, ring night for the two-time defending champion Warriors when they host Oklahoma City, apparently without Russell Westbrook. So even though there won't be Rockets basketball on the court, for the first time in over 4 months, there will be meaningful basketball being played. And so I think we can all say hallelujah to that. Now, as far as the Rockets are concerned, they're getting ready to open up tomorrow night at home against the New Orleans Pelicans, nationally televised on ESPN, 7 p.m. tip. Anthony Davis, one of the top five players in the world in your arena. So there's no excuse not to be excited about it. And wherever you are, you should be able to watch it. So it should be fun. The opener of what should be a really great season here in Houston against a quality team and both the conference and division rival in the New Orleans Pelicans. So to break it down more, because I know there's a lot of intrigue regarding any season opener, especially when you're playing another quality team, I'm going to be joined momentarily by Jake Madison. He's the host of Locked On Pelicans, my sister show here on this Locked On Podcast Network covering New Orleans. So he's going to give us a little bit of insight from their side of the fence. But to start off, I do want to give you a few keys that I see as far as what Houston fans should be looking for in tomorrow night's game. Now, the best news of all, it does appear that the Rockets will be healthy. The Rockets practiced Monday and today, and they pretty much have their expected rotation back. Michael Carter-Williams, after missing the last three games of the preseason with a sore left knee, he appears ready to go. Nene and Marquise Chris have been partial participants, but I'm not sure that either of those is really expected to play day one anyway. It seems, at least from the outset, the Rockets are going to be playing a lot with P.J. Tucker and or Carmelo Anthony as their backup five, rather than commit to Marquise Chris or Isaiah Hartenstein. Now, with Mike D'Antoni, everything's subject to change, but the vibe I get is that of the eight or nine expected rotation players, I don't think Chris and Renee are among them at that point. And Brandon Knight, we still don't have an exact timetable on him, but it's pretty clear that even if he's medically allowed to resume activities, it's a guy who hasn't played basketball in over a year and hasn't been out there for training camp. You're not just going to throw him in an NBA game. So Brandon Knight is a longer-term consideration. He's not a part of your rotation for the short term, even if he's hypothetically cleared. So as far as the guys we saw from the majority of the preseason that are expected to be a part of the rotation as the season starts in mid-October, yeah, they all seem good to go. And if that's the case, the Rockets should have a very, very good basketball team coming off a 65-17 season a year ago, a franchise record for wins, best record in the NBA by a long shot, and now coming off a 4-1 preseason, in which they look very, very solid with the new additions, Carmelo Anthony, James Ennis, Michael Carter-Williams, all showing you flashes at various points that they are ready to contribute sooner rather than later. Now, as far as the opener, assuming both teams are healthy, and that appears to be the case, barring some sort of freak incident at practice for either side today, the Rockets, on paper, should be the better team. They won 65 games a year ago. They were the one seed. The Pelicans won 48 games a year ago. They were the sixth seed. The Rockets won three of the four head-to-head. That said, the Pelicans are a playoff team in the West. They swept the Blazers, gave the Warriors at least a little bit of a push in their five-game second-round series, made them work, stole a game. Actually routed the Warriors in that game. And anytime you have one of the top five players on the planet, which Anthony Davis is, you are fully capable of winning on any given night. That's how good of a player he is. That also makes the situation all the more intriguing because with his player option looming in June 2020, that makes next summer the inflection point for Anthony Davis, the same way last year was for Paul George, the same way this year has been for Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler. So if New Orleans doesn't have a good season, well, it can go south in a hurry. We'll talk about both the short and long-term ramifications there with Jake Madison, our New Orleans expert, in just a few moments. But as far as tomorrow night's opener, while the Rockets are the better team and they're playing at home, the Pelicans are no pushover. It's an exciting game, and when Anthony Davis is in your gym, he's capable of winning on any given night. So it's far from a given. That said, the reason I think this matchup tilts towards the Rockets, besides Houston having a more talented roster, it's a little easier for Houston to play their three-guard lineups against the Pelicans than most teams in the NBA. Now, the Pelicans this offseason, Rajon Rondo and Boogie Cousins are out. Elfrid Payton and Julius Randle are in. That's actually not as much of a downgrade, if any, as it might seem on the surface, because keep in mind, the Pelicans actually made their run the second half of last year and in the playoffs without Boogie Cousins. So, in essence, you're swapping Rondo for Payton, and you're bringing in Randle for essentially the role that Cousins only filled for the first half of the year, and they weren't even that good when he played. But generally speaking, I think you'll see Payton playing a lot of the minutes that went to Rondo, and if you substitute Payton for a lot of that Rondo time, then the Pelicans had a lot of lineups last year with Rondo, Holiday, each one more, Ian Clark off the bench. They tended to go three guards a lot. And so if you're the Rockets, that makes it all the easier to play Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon together, which offensively can be absolutely lethal. The question is, how much do you give up defensively with size and bulk and everything that comes with that? Against the Pelicans, you might not be giving up that much. You can also see some Michael Carter-Williams. If he's healthy and playing as well as he did the first two games of the preseason, he could play some at the three as well. But generally speaking, that's the upside. It plays to the Rockets' strengths, in my opinion, in terms of those smaller guards, those playmakers, because you don't give up as much defensively against the Pelicans, who like to play three guards, as you do against a lot of other teams. So that's the upside scenario for the Rockets. The downside scenarios, as I see them, it starts with Anthony Davis, and that's everything with the New Orleans Pelicans. And while the Rockets do switch everything defensively, so generally speaking, everyone's going to guard everyone at some point in time, by and large, the Rockets-Pelicans matchups the last couple of years, when the chips have been down and it's slowed out in a half-court setting, it's been Trevor Ariza that's picked up Anthony Davis. Because even though Ariza is a small forward, he's a guy with enough length and upper body strength that he's capable of giving even Anthony Davis types, with his extreme length and athleticism, some difficulty. With Ariza and Ba Mute out, and James Ennis and Michael Carter-Williams in, while there's comparable overall length, I don't know if there's the same upper body strength, so it remains to be seen if either of those guys is as effective as Trevor Ariza was in this particular matchup against AD. I hope they are. They could be. It's just a fair question that has to be asked, especially if you run back the tape from the last couple of years when things really mattered late in half-court sets in close games between the Rockets and the Pelicans. So do you have a capable Ariza replacement defensively to pick up AD? That's going to be one of the first things that I'm looking at. The other thing I'm looking at, we mentioned earlier, the Rockets not really having a subtle backup center, so we know Carmelo Anthony is going to play 25 to 30 minutes, assuming health. Who does he pick up? Because that three-man New Orleans front court with Anthony Davis, Julius Randle, and Nikola Mirotic, all three of those guys are versatile. They can shoot from the perimeter. They're big enough and or strong enough to score at the rim. They can take you off the dribble. And for a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony, who doesn't have the same springs he had a few years ago, that's clearly lost a step defensively. I know he's buying into his role offensively and looks good as an upgrade, as a big stretch big relative to Ryan Anderson, but defensively, how much does he have left in the tank? How can he hold his own? This is going to be one of the more challenging matchups for him. So from day one, the Rockets need Carmelo to be ready. He had a good preseason, not just offensively. I thought he looked capable defensively as well. Well, the Pelicans are going to challenge him in a big way. So to me, it's the defensive end of the floor where the Pelicans do pose some unique challenges for the Rockets. Now, I'm not meaning to ignore Clint Capela and P.J. Tucker, who are very important, but as far as P.J. Tucker on AD, if you're thinking that, keep in mind he's a couple of inches smaller than, or shorter, I should say, than Trevor Ariza. So while he's certainly very strong in the upper body, even stronger than Trevor, I'm not sure he has the same length to disrupt AD if he wants to pull up and shoot over the top. And Clint Capela, while he's perfectly capable, well, number one, Capela gets switched on to guards a lot for obvious reasons. And secondly, because Capella is so irreplaceable to the Rockets, they don't really have another body like him. I don't really think you want to see him checking Anthony Davis all that frequently, or else you're going to risk him getting into foul trouble and the Rockets not really having a suitable replacement. So all in all, do I expect the Rockets to win? Yes, and I think it's a very friendly matchup offensively. But on the defensive end of the court, based partly on matchups and partly on the fact that the Rockets just have a lot of new bodies, James Ennis, Michael Carter-Williams, and Carmelo Anthony that we haven't seen in meaningful games, that to me is the intrigue. Will the Rockets hold up on that end? That's what we'll find out tomorrow night. Now, to get a little more insight on New Orleans in particular, we're going to be joined in just a couple of minutes by Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans. But while we're getting him connected, I want to tell you about my friends over at MyBookie, the sponsors of today's show. And you know, ever since I started this podcast, people ask me a lot of questions, but one of the most frequent I get is, who should I bet on? And of course, I'm telling you guys, I would take the Rockets tomorrow night. I think they're the better team. But the truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you do, you've got to check out MyBookie, and you can find them at mybookie.ag. Remember, when you're betting, who you're betting on, it's just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, if you're into gambling, they are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, they've got great reviews online, and their mobile site at mybookie.ag is very easy to use. So why don't you lay down some cash and win big today? One of my favorite parts about MyBookie is that they've got in-game live betting. They've got great player perks. So even if you don't get your bet in by start time, or even if you're not really sure on the line for a given game, but you feel good about a player, well, they've got so many options on ways and things that you can bet on. You can even bet on the over-under of how many fantasy points a player might score in a game. That's how detailed they are. But the real perk of this, as my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, join now and MyBookie will match your first deposit 100% dollar for dollar up to $1,000. To take advantage of that, use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Just visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use that Locked On promo code when creating your account to claim the bonus. It really is that simple. You play, you win, and you get paid. All right, now on the line with us is Jake Madison. You can follow him on Twitter at NOLAJake, and you can also listen to his podcast, Locked On Pelicans. You can find that on the same platform where you listen to me here at Locked On Rockets. Jake, welcome to the show. How's it going today?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on, Ben.
Absolutely. Glad to connect with you. And I spent the first segment taking, you know, the 30,000-foot view from Houston of the Pelicans. Obviously, the Pelicans, 48-34 last year, sixth seed, swept the first round against Portland, offseason, Rajon Rondo, Boogie Cousins out, Elfrid Payton, Julius Randle in. So that's the outsider's view at a high level. What I'm curious about, it was a very quiet preseason, if you will, for the Pelicans, 0-5, nearly a minus 12 in the point differential. Not a lot to be impressed by. Now, the games don't matter because it's the preseason. But for a team that was relatively healthy, Anthony Davis played before the games, I was struck by just how poor some of the metrics were, bottom five in the league in net rating. Is there anything from the preseason that concerns you, or do you just chalk it up to the fact that the games didn't matter and they were just going through the motions? Because here in Houston, it's not like I've watched that many Pelicans preseason games, just a few highlights. Few highlights here and there. Just curious if you take anything out of it or if you just kind of roll your eyes and say the games don't matter.
You know, I think that's the high level view, is saying the games don't matter, and they don't. It's preseason. You know, you say Anthony Davis played in 4 out of 5, but there were 2 games where he didn't play in the second half as well. So okay. It kind of limits his minutes there. Same thing for Drew Holiday. And those are the two main guys on this team that's going to lead the Pelicans to whatever success they may have this coming year. You did have a guy that they were expecting to play big minutes in preseason in Jahlil Okafor getting hurt in the first game. He didn't play as well. And then the rest of that really was just now cycling through a lot of guys who are no longer on the roster and trying to figure out one or two roles and situations with that. You know, even when they did play, Anthony Davis was going something like 25%. He's clearly just trying to save himself for the regular season and the heavy load that he's going to be playing here in New Orleans. And he, you know, you're looking at him playing close to 38 minutes per game right here. So him not trying in preseason is not something I'm exactly concerned about. What might have been a little bit concerning overall in preseason would have been the defense. It was not great. They were giving up a lot of points, and particularly a lot of points in the paint, averaging something like well above 60 points in the paint allowed. That would have led the league by far last year. That's a bit of a concern. I think that maybe goes down a little bit more once Anthony Davis is trying and doing his best rim protection. There's a reason he finished top three defensive player of the year, because he's able to kind of take away that paint from these other guys that are driving. So it's just, you know, it's preseason. What can you do, right?
Right. What are your first thoughts when it comes to, you know, Pelicans against the Rockets? In the last segment, I went through how I think of this matchup. As far as the Rockets are concerned, I think the upside for Houston is that because there's typically a lot of three-guard sets in New Orleans, I know there's no longer Rajon Rondo, but you do have Elfrid Payton, and then, of course, you've got Jrue Holiday, you've got Etuan Moore, you've got Ian Clark off the bench. So it makes it all the easier for the Rockets to play Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon, which offensively the combination of those three can be lethal. You can potentially put Michael Carter-Williams in there as well. That's the upside, is that I think offensively it's friendly to Houston. I think defensively, though, there are challenges. Now, the Rockets do switch on a lot of things, but if you think back to the last couple of years with these Rockets-Pelicans matchups, if it's close down the stretch, the guy who's actually given Anthony Davis the hardest time, I would say, would be Trevor Ariza, because he's pretty flexible. You know, he's a small forward, he can move in space, but he's actually a lot stronger in his upper body than you might think, and so that combination is useful against AD. Whereas with James Ennis and Michael Carter-Williams, they might have similar length, but are they as strong in their upper body? That's fair to question. And then beyond that, Carmelo Anthony, he's replacing Ryan Anderson, but last year Ryan Anderson wasn't really playable against the Pelicans. He was dreadful in those matchups, because when you ask him to guard players like AD or Mirotic or now Julius Randle, they can take advantage of bigs who are not necessarily that mobile. So to me, can you replace Trevor Ariza defensively in this matchup, what he gave you against Anthony Davis? How playable defensively is a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony? Those are the things from a Rockets perspective that give me a little bit of concern in terms of, you know, Rockets-Pelicans matchups this year, of which there'll be four of them, like always. Just curious your thoughts when you see Rockets-Pelicans on paper. What stands out as friendly for New Orleans? What isn't so much?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different ways you can look at this, and I think you kind of nailed it. It's trying to kind of neutralize AD as much as possible, which is, of course, easier said than done. The other thing, and you said now that they've got Julius Randle into this team, you're going to need to throw Capella and that kind of body on him, because he is a bull down low, and I don't really know if the Rockets have anyone else who's kind of capable of slowing him down. When he gets his eye on the rim, that guy can score. He did it particularly in the second half of the season for the Lakers last year, and now you lose that flexibility, and those type of defenders like Ariza are the guys that really do give Anthony Davis a lot of trouble. There's a reason you see Kevin Durant guarding him at times and giving him some trouble. It's guys who, like you said, are strong, have length, and can kind of keep up with his speed and athleticism a little bit too. You're not going to take him out of the game entirely, but if you can slow him down a little bit, it can throw the Pelicans out of their offense, particularly because they're not a very consistent three-point shooting team. They led the league in three-point shooting percentage for December of last year, and then that dropped all the way back towards the middle of the league in terms of rating that as the season went on. So that's going to be a bit of a concern. And, you know, Jrue Holiday, if he can keep up what he did at the end of last season and the playoffs, I think really helps there. But it does allow the Rockets to kind of throw their better defenders out there, and it makes this Pelicans team easier to defend on the perimeter, and they're going to need to rely on going inside. On the flip side of that, defensively, you know, the Pelicans rolled out a kind of interesting strategy against the Rockets last year, and that was to just clamp down on the three-point line, not get beat by that, which is probably good for a team that doesn't shoot threes particularly well like New Orleans, and let Capella and Harden just kill them inside. I think it was over, what was it, been two games where you saw just Capella going off and lob after lob from Harden on pick and rolls and them just getting into the lane. I think the Pelicans kind of are maybe going to go with a different approach this game. I think they've got to take away the easy baskets inside. This team really found itself in the second half of last season after that DeMarcus Cousins injury in that game they won against Houston at home here in New Orleans. And to kind of get out and play in transition, you need misses. You can't do it when you're taking the ball out from under your basket and inbounding it and letting the Houston Rockets defense get set and get back. So you've got to rely on misses, and the best way to do it is not going to be Capella inside, because that dude can score and he shoots a high percentage there. Same thing with Harden on the inside. You're going to need to do that after three-point misses, grab the board and go.
Yeah, and I do want to point out, we didn't mention, we were talking about the defensive players earlier for the Rockets, PJ Tucker and Clint Capella. Well, first off, as you mentioned, you're going to need some of both of those players' time to be spent picking up Julius Randle because of how strong he is at the bucket. And while PJ Tucker is one of the league's better defenders, it remains to be seen whether he has the length to bother Anthony Davis when he tries to pull off the same way that Trevor Ariza, because even though Tucker is the Rockets starting four, of course he's a couple of inches shorter, so it remains to be seen exactly how strong of a matchup he is there. Now, of course, the balance of the game, the Rockets are going to be switching defensively, that's what they always do, but of course, when it comes to half-court sets late in games, if it's close, you are going to see some preferred matchups, and that's where I think it's kind of tricky to see exactly what the Rockets' preferred matchup for AD is going to be in this game, as opposed to last year when you knew that when the chips were down, they would go to Trevor Ariza as that guy. Jake, offensively for the Pelicans, what's the dynamic like with Peyton instead of Rajon Rondo? Just curious, because so much last year you saw a bit of a revival of playoff Rondo in terms of how they initiate their offense. Is it more Drew Holiday? Is it more Elfrid Payton? Just curious whether the offensive approach is different now that you've cycled out a true point guard and now you're bringing in more of a traditional combo type.
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely going to be different, but it's different in a number of ways. And I do want to – so Rondo did have a bit of a renaissance revival, kind of revitalized his career there a little bit. But there were times when he was basically unplayable due to effort issues or just kind of being mopey or what have you. You know, the standard Rondo things that you would kind of expect from him. And you did not play him in the fourth quarter really at all. So, you know, while it hurts to kind of lose that distributor, and in the playoffs he did play particularly well on the offensive end, I don't think it's necessarily going to be as bad because the consistency just wasn't there. You know, I still think you'll see Drew Holiday playing off ball, and it'll be Elfrid Payton kind of working as that main point guard, combo guard role. Holiday, when he can kind of get the ball out of his hands or just know his role is to be an attacker and not someone who needs to kind of drive and pass, drive and kick, I think that kind of frees him up. He turned out to be a very good finisher around the rim. He's a very strong NBA player as is, and he can finish through contact that way too, so you can kind of see him getting to the line a little bit more this season as well. When it comes to Elfrid Payton, they're very high on him because, as Alvin Gentry has consistently said this offseason, he basically got to the rim at a higher rate than any other point guard not named Russell Westbrook, so it's not a bad number two to be behind. Not great at finishing around the rim, though maybe cutting his hair helps him there a little bit, so it's not kind of falling in his eyes and screwing up a shot and his different things there. So I think they kind of like the idea of him driving, slashing, attacking, and then either dumping the ball off to Randall or AD down low, or kicking out to a guy like Nikola Mirotic on the perimeter, or Etuan Moore or Drew Holiday, who's a pretty good spot-up shooter. But ultimately, this team doesn't want to play in the half court a ton. They want to run. You know, they had the highest pace by far after the DeMarcus Cousins injury last season. They finished number one overall, and they've been playing at even a way faster pace in preseason, which isn't unexpected. But they don't want to do that. They're not. They take a lot of their shots early in the shot clock, the majority of their offense there. But when you look at the efficiency of it, they're right around the middle of the league. Their offense looks really good because they're just taking so many damn shots so early, and that tends to be where higher quality looks are. But they're not great at making those. But if they can get out and transition and run, that's where they really can, because you are getting even higher quality looks than that. But if they're just taking early shots in the shot clock in a half-court offense, that's where I think they'll falter, and that's where you don't really trust a guy like Elfrid Payton to kind of create for others just because he hasn't shown it yet. But he grabs the defensive board and goes coast-to-coast. That's where he's looking to kind of make the magic happen, I guess, here for the New Orleans Pelicans.
And generally speaking, if there's going to be an upset, it's easier for the underdog to pull something like that off if there's a contrast in styles. And the Rockets, since the midpoint of last season, have been one of the league's slowest paced teams. So I think if you speed the game up, you also might make the Rockets a little bit uncomfortable. So I think if there's a recipe for this particular matchup, that might be it. Jake, I want to spin this forward to the larger question, I think, for this entire New Orleans Pelicans season, and it's one that I think fans in Houston and fans across the NBA have a lot of interest in, and that's: what's the future of Anthony Davis? Top five player in the league, without a doubt. He apparently would argue number one, and I don't think he's that far off. So all that seems well, and everything he said on the record about the Pelicans franchise has been very positive. It's a good team, and there's not a lot on the surface to be concerned about. That said, he is one season away. Next summer, he'll be at that inflection point, 1 year from his player option, the same way that Paul George was a year ago in Indiana, the same way Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler have been this year. And I've seen a lot of stories out there already about AD and the Lakers. I've generally rolled my eyes at them because I think a lot of that's out there for clicks. But at the same time, the fact is, the Pelicans are probably going to want some sort of indication from him next summer about his long-term interest, because if not, you're going to get a lot more trade value next summer than you conceivably would entering free agency or sign and trade route, whatever it may be. So I'm just curious what the vibe is in New Orleans. Are fans at all concerned about that date, that inflection point next summer? Are they bothered at all by the various Laker reports that are out there, him signing with Rich Paul's agency, so on and so forth? Just give us the vibe for Anthony Davis entering 2018-2019 and what I imagine is a pretty important year for the Pelicans franchise in terms of, you know, convincing him long-term that that's where he wants to be.
Yeah, you know, and you can speed up that timeline to this season because he is eligible for that designated player, that max extension after this year. So we'll have a very good indication of if he's staying or not, whether or not he signs that. Because once you sign that deal, that would then kick in after the option year. You have to stay there for 1 year. So if he does sign that deal, basically you've got three more years of Anthony Davis before he's even eligible to be traded whatsoever. But you got to convince him to take that deal. And, you know, as crazy as it would be to turn down all of that money, I don't know if that's the most important thing to him. From my conversations with him and people around him, this is a guy who is hyper aware of his legacy and wants to go down as one of the best players of all time. Simple as that. And to do that, he knows he needs to win in the playoffs consistently, and you can't just get out of the first round and then get bounced. You've got to make deep runs and ideally win multiple titles. And I think that's something that's heavily, heavily on his mind. So this year is going to go a long way toward convincing him that this team can compete in the NBA for years to come, and that's how you get him to sign that deal. Pelicans fans are cautiously optimistic about this. They've been a little bit burned before with Chris Paul, you know, the kind of beloved player who, after a very good run here, forced his way out because they just weren't winning. And I think the Pelicans fan base here is a little bit scared of that happening again. And again, you know, it is conceivable they could pass up that money. He says all the right things, but it's going to come down to what his internal priorities are. And he seems to throw out there that winning is more important than everything else. So I think they're a little bit nervous about that and, you know, maybe take a breath and a sigh of relief here once he does potentially sign that other deal. But man, do they hate Lakers fans and do they hate Boston Celtics fans who are constantly coming up with ways to try and trade AD to their respective teams. In terms of signing with Clutch Sports, Rich Paul, and LeBron's agency, I think that has more to do with branding and endorsements for Anthony Davis. You don't really see him in that many commercials and other things like that. You know, he's sponsored by Red Bull. The real commercials you see him in are like Mobil 1 Oil and things like that. I think he wants something more than that. You'll hear him keep referring to himself as the most dominant player in the NBA, which I think is going to kind of become his catchphrase or trademark, something like that. And he's speaking more, and he's just more vocal than he's been in years past about that. I think that's what that has to do with it, than just him just kind of taking the next leap in, like, the public consciousness, than him wanting to force his way out. And look, he's happy here. His family likes it here. You know, he enjoys living in New Orleans and the lifestyle that he has here. And if they can win here, he's going to feel very good about that because he would like to be one of those guys that just does it in one place and leaves an even greater legacy by not doing it by bouncing around from team to team. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So, yeah, you know, this year's really important because they want him to sign this deal. You know, the Pelicans are going to put it out there the second they can. And if he doesn't, you know, that's where you do start to lose some leverage in negotiations and maybe get a worse return than you would like otherwise. So this year it's all going to be about winning and trying to present that deal in front of Anthony Davis and getting him to sign it.
And when I hear you say all of that, I keep going back to the pressure that's on Dell Demps. And I would imagine, and this is one reason why I'm kind of bullish on the Pelicans, I would take the over on their win figure because it's a team to me that's going to be, that should be pretty aggressive at the deadline. They picked up Mirotić last year, but because this year is so important on the AD front, you need to maximize it for everyone you can get. If you can advance one more round, even if it's not competing with the Warriors or the Rockets, if you can get closer, the margins matter in this case. So, you know, we saw yesterday Dell Demps picked up Wes Johnson. Believe it or not, Wes Johnson did not die after being crossed over by James Harden last year. Yes, he still exists. And, you know, that's a little move. But the point is, I would expect Dell, you know, especially as we get to the trade season, should be pretty aggressive, shouldn't he? Because it feels like this is a year where the Pelicans want to cash in. You want to get every margin you can to give AD every reason to stay.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, you know, I think it shows you the state of the Pelicans' wings here, if you want a little more insight to the team, when Wes Johnson is actually a big upgrade over a number of the guys on the roster, as sad as that kind of is. And also, don't forget that his salary is about close to $1 million more than Oleksiy Ajinsa they sent out, which means they can package it, potentially bring back even more salary. So that gives them a little bit more flexibility. But they're going to be aggressive. There's no way they're going to have a first-round pick in, you know, next year's draft, which is just par for the course with this team, because there is so much pressure, and, you know, the clock is ticking on Anthony Davis here in New Orleans, and they've got to do something. And you, like you said, you've got to convince him to stay, and you've got to be aggressive doing that, and just, like you said, maximizing every single opportunity.
Last question for you. I think there's one area that I think Pelican fans and Rockets fans can probably find some consolation with one another, and it's rolling their eyes at some of the national narratives that are out there regarding the off seasons of these two teams. Of course, with the Rockets, a lot of us have joked about the national perception suddenly turning Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, while quality players, into much more than they actually were, and not giving full credence to the idea that the system was responsible for some of their success in Houston. On the New Orleans side of the fence, I've seen some of the same dramatic and over-the-top reactions in that, you know, on paper, okay, you lost Rajon Rondo and DeMarcus Cousins, you bring in Elfrid Payton and Julius Randle, and look, on paper, the guys you lost are bigger names. The flip side of that, as you mentioned earlier, it wasn't like Rondo was particularly great all the time, and as far as DeMarcus Cousins goes, look, I understand he's a big name, but the second half of the year, when the Pelicans actually got going, and then in the playoffs, when they swept the Blazers and at least made the Warriors sweat a little bit, Boogie Cousins wasn't even out there. So when you factor in that, again, you know, Rondo was relatively hit or miss, and Cousins was not even out there the second half of the season and overtime, the playoffs, to me, it seems like some of the pessimism is overdone when it comes to who's in, who's out in New Orleans. To me, it seems like you can mount a case that relative to the group they had that was very quality the second half of last season and in the postseason, that maybe it's a better group, at least on paper, to start the year than what you had in April and May.
Oh, yeah, it's no doubt in my mind that on opening night that this Pelicans team is more talented than the team that was in the playoffs. Part of that has to do with because, you know, you didn't have DeMarcus Cousins back then, and he wouldn't be healthy to start this year had they re-signed him, and the whole other story on all of those deals and
right.
Everything and the fun we had with the boogie ball drop there. But now you add Julius Randle into the team, and Elfrid Payton subs in for Rajon Rondo, who didn't really play in the, you know, fourth quarter of those games against the Blazers or really in the Warriors series, that, yeah, it's a better team on paper. The real question is, will it be a better team as the season goes on? Will it be a better team in April, in March? And that's
sure.
The question that remains to be seen. They played and found an identity in the second half of last year, not second half, final 25 games or so after DeMarcus Cousins went down. But it's a small sample size of success. Can you play at that pace over an 82-game season? Can everyone stay healthy over that 82-game season? And if they do and have relative success playing with that pace, I think this is a very good team. I truly, truly do. I think the bigs complement each other really well. I'm high on Julius Randle having a breakout year. Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis. He finished runner-up in MVP last year. He's, you know, maybe the front runner right now for MVP going into this year. There's the makings of a very good team, but I think a lot of people are being a little bit overly cautious, saying they're not going to be able to repeat that success. But until, you know, the games start mattering, I guess we won't really find out. But I think, you know, at least here in New Orleans, there's a lot of high hopes that they can.
Good stuff. Folks, he's Jake Madison. Follow him on Twitter at NolaJake and listen to him at Locked On Pelicans, our sister show on this Locked On Podcast Network. You can find the same places you listen to Locked On Rockets. Jake, thanks so much for the time, bud.
Of course, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Sure thing. Again, that's Jake Madison. Thanks to him for taking the time to join us, and thanks to you for taking the time to listen. We're a little bit over our usual 30-minute time slot, so this is where we will break it until tomorrow night's game, when we'll have actual regular season basketball to discuss. So until then, if you want more content, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And also, if you want to follow Jake to get some Pelicans perspective, he's on there at NolaJake. Besides Twitter, I mentioned that if you want our archives or any other place to listen to the show, best place to get it, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. You can find all these shows across the great Locked On Podcast Network covering the NBA, NFL, MLB, college sports, you name it. We've got local experts at all of those places. So if you would subscribe to us, that's easy to do. You can do it at the platform of your choice, and that's how you'll get episodes right when they come out. And if you'd be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's how we can make the business model work and look attractive to potential advertisers, the same way apparently we did to MyBookie today. That's our sponsors over at MyBookie. Go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and from there you can get your initial deposit matched 100% up to $1,000. That's a new promo for new customers, so check out MyBookie, mybookie.ag, the sponsors of today's program. Anyway, that'll do it for today's show. Thanks to, again, Jake, for joining us, and thanks to all of you guys for listening. And come back tomorrow night after the Rockets open the season against the Pelicans, barely over 24 hours away now, and then we'll have our first recap, hopefully a winning 3 points recap of what goes on the floor at Toyota Center tomorrow night. Until then, have a good one, and we'll chat tomorrow after the season opener when the Rockets battle the New Orleans Pelicans.